This is Digital Story Podcast number 1002, June 3rd, 2025. Today's theme is Photographers Talking About Podcasting and More. I'm Derek Story. You wouldn't think that photography and podcasting would go together so well, but this week's guests confirm what I already knew. They are beautiful together. We'll hear from Randall Schwartz and Frederick Van, plus a few words from Aaron Hockley. Add a dash of camera industry news, and I have a full-bodied episode baked and ready to enjoy. I hope you stick around. When I was organizing the 1,000th TDS episode, there was some great content that I set aside for a follow-up show. I think I even mentioned that in that episode we did, right? And the reason why I set it aside, well, there are two reasons, actually. The first reason being that I didn't want the show to be any longer than an hour and a half. I figured those of you that listen to the podcast every week, you know, you're sort of used to 32 minutes or 34 minutes, but not 90 minutes, right? And not more than 90 minutes. So I go, no. I've got to draw the line somewhere there. Second reason was that these conversations that I'm going to share with you today hang together really well. And I could see when I was editing all of this content and organizing it, that this would be a nice little show on its own. So thank you, Randall and Aaron, for your patience, not being a part of two episodes ago, but definitely being the stars this week. And then Frederick Van, we had an extended conversation. I shared the first half with you during the celebration show, but there's a whole second half where we both talk about how important podcasting has been to our photography careers and our careers in general. And I wanted to share that separately. So we have Randall and Aaron and Frederick today. And then we also have some industry news. There's some interesting things going on. And before you know it, our half an hour will have eclipsed. All right. So let's start out with Randall Schwartz. He's a book author, a podcaster, a photographer, and more. I met him during my days at O'Reilly Media, and our careers intersected off and on for almost two decades. The interview you're about to hear was recorded for the 1000th podcast celebration, but I decided to bundle it with the other conversations for this show focusing on photography and podcasting. Photographers tend to be good at many things, and I think their synergy that emerges from that diversity. This interview with Randall shines a light on how all of these things blend together. All right, I'm here on Zoom with Randall Schwartz, and Randall and I, we go way back. We really do. How you doing, Randall?
I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me to be on this show. This is great.
Well, you're a fellow podcaster, so you can kind of relate.
I know that Floss Weekly ran for, I ran it for 13 years and then I retired from it because I was getting a little tired of doing the show. And boy, reclaiming 5 hours a week was definitely handy. There's a lot of time that goes into an hour show every week, as you might imagine. I'm sure you have that. Yes, right. Exactly. And just all the production work for that. But yeah, so we're both fellow podcasters, but we're also fellow photographers. And that's really how I know you, is all the work you were doing with OSCON early on, because I was at every OSCON from the beginning, even before when it was called the Pearl Conference. And then I did a bunch of OSCONs. I kind of stopped going about 10 years ago, kind of like when COVID hit, when they started being virtual for a little bit, because I said, you know, I'm not doing Floss Weekly anymore, so I don't really have like a guaranteed slot as press, which is what I was getting into for the last 5 or 6 years. And I've moved on. I'm now doing Dart and Flutter instead of Pearl. That's been really wonderful for me. I'm having a great time doing it. I'm making mobile apps. I'm teaching stuff all over the world, virtually, thank goodness. And very few plane trips these days. and
Cool.
just having a great time doing that. So yeah, but
Excellent.
our relationship is those two things, plus also the cruises. So you've been on a number of what we originally called Geek Cruises, now called Insight Cruises, with my friend Neil Bauman, and we can talk a little bit about that if you want.
Yeah, let's start with OSCON was the O'Reilly, big O'Reilly conference, and I worked for O'Reilly, and you were the Pearl guru for O'Reilly. So I knew about you, and I went to the conferences because I was an editor for O'Reilly. But the first time that we really kind of hung out was, and I'm going to let you tell the story, at one of your parties.
Yeah, so if we're I think we're talking Monterey. So it's either Monterey or the one we did in San Diego a little bit later. But the one in Monterey was interesting in that again for all these parties, Bill Harp, old long dear friend of mine, unfortunately passed away a decade ago. He would set up these parties at basically taking over an entire bar for the entire evening. And work out a way that we could always justify the cost of the party by getting at least two or three clients, and because the clients paid 20,000 a week for us, so all we had to have was two winners out of the entire party, and it was paid for, so it was great. And I became known as the biggest party. The Stonehenge parties were the biggest parties ever. The year my llama book was released, or alpaca books, or my alpaca book was released, we had a party where we had a live alpaca. I don't know if you remember that one in downtown Portland. That was awesome.
I do.
So we had the greatest parties, and you took great pictures of one of our early parties, and it ended up in the official publication, which is ironic given that we never went the normal official OSCON O'Reilly route to host the parties, where it's supposed to be O'Reilly gets in the middle, creates the venue, lets us pay on the other side, and they take their cut. Well, no, we went straight to the wholesale. And so we were
Exactly.
getting incredible rates on our parties that were just amazing. And so they were always the unofficial party of the week.
Yeah, and that's why I
Yeah.
wanted to come. I mean, on the very first one, I remember you invited me to it, and I didn't know if you'd
Yeah.
think I'd really show up or not, but I did. And I did with
Yeah.
Cameron Hand, and I was interested because it wasn't official. I mean, this was kind of the culture that kind of hovered around everything. And I go, man, I got to go to this and see what's going on. And it was known as the party. You used to have t-shirts and the whole deal. I mean,
Oh yeah.
it was really fun. And I just enjoyed the heck out of it. I mean, I thought this was one of the best geek parties I've ever been to.
Yeah, Bill knew his stuff precisely. I miss him dearly because he was such a good influence on my marketing, the marketing side of my business, which I'm woefully inadequate at. I can already tell you, based on recent profitability, I can tell you exactly how woeful I am at that. So, and you mentioned the t-shirts. We had a booth that we always staffed during the show as well, and we would give out t-shirts. And I remember one year, I think it was my idea actually, but it might have been Bill's idea. We said you had to wear the t-shirt in order to get in the party.
Oh,
And by Wednesday afternoon, there was a bright fluorescent green. You could look out in the hallways, and all you'd see is this flood of bright fluorescent green shirts. It was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. And you got some pictures of that, I remember. And
He
just, it
did.
was just, it was just brilliant. I miss those days. I do miss those days. I'm not having anywhere near that amount of partying these days. Getting older and all that stuff, so things start adding up. More than OSCON, though, you were also showing up at pretty much every O'Reilly event that I was at too,
I
right? Because
was, I
we did
was,
some
and
East
I,
Coast stuff.
yeah, and I actually became the ad hoc photographer, even though that wasn't part of my original job. It
Huh.
just became like I started doing it for them as well, and it was nice because it got me to all the events, and so that's what main reason why I'm a photographer anyway, so I can go places, right, and have
Yeah.
someone else pay for it. That's my goal in life. Speaking of which, let's go to phase
Yes.
two, which was again we were hanging out on Geek Cruises.
I have just a little snippet of audio that I'd like to play for you and the audience here. Let me see if I can find the button to do that. Let's try this.
This is episode 17 for September 11th, 2006, part one of an interview with Derek Story. So, with me on Skype today, I have none other than Mr. Derek Story, a renowned photographer, videographer, an all-around nice guy, published author, and so on. Hello, Derek.
Hey, how you doing today, Randall?
Derek, your voice is so familiar to me, not because just I've met you in person, but because you also do a podcast of your own. Can you describe that a little bit?
Yeah, actually, I'm working on two podcasts right now. The one that you probably have listened to the most, because you're a photographer also, is The Digital Story at thedigitalstory.com, and it's in iTunes. And that
And then you go on and talk about that, but I tell you, that was you on my podcast talking about your podcast at the time, and that was 2007. So you've been doing TDS for quite a while now, huh?
I have. I think I actually started in 2005, I believe. And so, I was a couple of years into it. Just really started getting the hang of it in the last year or so.
Finally.
I remember you told me once, or I think it was it might have been an email, or you told me, but you used to say, yeah, I listen, but I usually listen about 1.5 speed,
Oh
just
yeah. Oh
because.
yeah. Always, always. I can't take content less than 1.5 speed right now, because it's just insane. There's just so much to consume. And I actually stopped listening to most podcasts these days. I'm listening to way too much consuming videos now, YouTube videos and crap. So but what that was actually recording from, we can also slide into this, is that you were a participant and a one of the lecturers on Geek Cruises, which was is big for me. My friend Neil Bauman came and did a seminar with me and discovered I was kind of a cool guy. And he said, "I want to put together a conference on a cruise ship. Would you be willing to do that?" And that got me going. And sort of like about the 10th cruise in or so, we were starting to pair up, I think, with Macworld magazine. And I think you were on one of the Mac cruises, as because we wanted a photographic element with that. So you were able to provide your instruction. I remember sitting in some of your classes and studying that triangle relationship between exposure and aperture and ISO and stuff, and trying to figure that stuff all out, and what's depth of field. You did a really good job of talking about all that. And also just talking about equipment, what to carry, what to have. I've gone through a couple of Canons, and my most recent purchase was one of the Sony A1s, which is probably really old now. It's probably like, what, 10 years old, the
Yeah,
A1s. But
they've been in it now for a while.
yeah, exactly. So, but I mean, the shutterless one was so amazing. It was really slick. But I learned a lot by listening to all of your podcasts, and you've interviewed some really great people on this show. So
Yeah,
thank you
thank
for doing
you.
that.
So it was interesting because when Macworld became a sponsor of the Geek Cruises, I was a writer for Macworld magazine, and that was my ticket into the cruises. That's how I got to know Neil through my work with Macworld. So I got in that way, thanks to Macworld and thanks to Neil. I was able to see parts of the world that I don't think I ever would have got to otherwise, including our last trip together, which was in Cuba.
That was a lot of fun. And so much to photograph down there. Boy, I tell you, I was definitely snapping a lot of pics down there.
Oh
So
my gosh.
it was a
It
lot of
was
fun. Yeah. Incredible.
terrific. Well, Randall, I
Yeah.
really appreciate you coming on and reminiscing with me. I have to tell you, I was tickled when I saw on the calendar that you had signed up for an interview, and I go, man, this is good. We've got to have some history in this thing, right? Because that's kind of what this is all about.
Multiple venues, multiple ways to do that. I mean, the cruises, the OSCONs, and the fact that we're both podcasters, yeah, and both real, busy photographers, yeah.
Absolutely. So I wish you continued success, and you're on like your third encore career. I hope it goes well, and I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing some stories.
Thank you for having me, Derek. It's been fun.
Aaron Hockley has combined his passion for photography with creating YouTube videos talking about the very thing he loves. Back at the dawn of Micro Four Thirds, he attended one of my workshops and shares a few words about that experience.
Hey, Aaron here from techphotoguy.com. And my TDS moment I want to share is when I attended a workshop in 2011. It was in conjunction with the Sonoma County Hot Air Balloon Festival. We were in person. We were headquartered out of Derek's studio in Santa Rosa, which was a great kind of home base for us to eat some meals at and review images. And we went out to the Hot Air Balloon Festival. And it was interesting because we had 8 photographers on that workshop. And even though we were all at the same event, the same things were happening in front of us, everybody had their own perspective. And some people went for more artsy, fartsy, abstract type images. Some people really were doing a lot of portrait work with the hot air balloonists and the other attendees. I remember at one point that one of the announcers for the event made a comment about how she'd gotten a manicure with hot air balloons on her fingernails. And so I went and I sought out the announcer to get a photo of her manicure with the hot air balloons on the fingernails. But it was interesting to socialize with other photographers that everybody had their own perspective. It was 2011. I think it was the first time I saw a mirrorless camera in the wild. One of the attendees had a very early model mirrorless camera. I think it was a Micro Four Thirds. And the other 7 of us were all kind of giving him the side eye, like, what is this weird contraption? It's so much smaller than all of our cameras. And here we are, you know, 14, 15 years later, and most of us are using those mirrorless cameras every day. So it was a great chance to get together in person, you know, make some new connections. There's people that I still keep in touch with that I met at that workshop. And, you know, it was a good experience. You know, Derek's a great workshop host. Make sure that attendees have a comfortable experience while also learning a lot about photography. So that was a lot of fun, and I'm glad I got to be part of that journey.
Frederick Van needs no introduction. And the first part of our interview was on the 1000th episode, but we had more to talk about, including the importance of podcasting for both of our careers. So today I'm going to share the second part of that conversation. How central is podcasting to your business? If you took podcasting out of your business, what would that look like?
That seems like a simple question, but not that simple. So, so you know, I think you knew, like 2.5 years ago, TWIP was acquired by Smug Mug, right? So, and I am now an employee of, so it was basically an acqui-hire, right? They hire you and you just keep, you keep doing the stuff that you were doing, only now you get a salary and teams to work with and all the good stuff that goes along with being with a group versus a ninja, you know? TWIP, the business unit of TWIP is podcasting, right? It is a podcast. But if podcasting is the planet, the moons around that planet and or my around me would be public speaking, education, digital courses. TWIP is also a paid private community, you know, so there's a monthly recurring income that comes from that. So all these different things add up to bring in to TWIP. The biggest piece of TWIP, which I had kind of sunset until right about now, is the advertising part of TWIP. So when TWIP got acquired, I paused the advertising and sponsorship and just haven't really started it back up. So now I did some infrastructure things on the back end. Now I can bring this podcast brought to you by that kind of thing again. That was a big revenue driver for the podcast, but as a solopreneur, it was unpredictable because you never know when you're going to get an advertiser, who they're going to be. They're going to, even if you get them and you do the run, getting paid was was another tap dance to go through. Now that TWIP is owned by Smug Mug, a lot of that will be easier because we have a sales team now. Does that stuff.
Since you've gone with Smug Mug, they've still allow Frederick to be Frederick pretty much. I mean, that's the way it sounds to me.
Yes, absolutely. That, in fact, that was part of the early discussions that we had was, to their credit, they brought up, well, if we acquire TWIP, we don't want to gut TWIP and have it seem like it's now acquired. Now it's just a Smug Mug Flickr commercial, you know, because that's of no value to anyone. Then the audience will vanish. And, you know, what's the point? So we had a very conscious discussion about a separation of church and state editorially. And how that should work, because there are obviously going to be some rough areas with that, you know, that will test both sides of that. But so far, it's been great. you know, and it's great. I'm not an idiot, right? So I'm not going to say things that aren't true that are going to be to the detriment of a company, or things that are this insider information that I wouldn't have gotten had I not been an employee, you know. So it's that kind of common sense stuff, plus trust bidirectionally. So yeah, it's been good.
Where I really got to see the value of podcasting was, for me, was during the pandemic. Because at that prior to the pandemic, my business was a balance of doing the podcast, writing, and then I had a lot of client work. I worked for people where I went and took pictures for them, or I did, whatever sort of assignments, and I was even on a couple payrolls for doing that. And of course, that all ended bang, like overnight when the pandemic hit. And so there I was standing, I had the podcast, which was mine. And, I had a couple other, I had some workshops going and all that. And what I decided to do was, since I had this audience, and I was having a lot of conversations with other photographers at the time, because we were all trying to figure out, what are we going to do, right? None of us wants to go work for Walmart, so what are we going to do? And so we were trying to figure that out. So I said, okay, I've got this audience I've been building over years. I'm just going to go to more of a format with the other stuff that is pandemic friendly, which is online. And everything was happening online. So started doing online workshops. I built an online community for all of us on Mighty Networks, where we can hang out. I put my back a little bit more into Patreon. I did all that kind of stuff. And I know other photographers tried that at the time who didn't have podcasts, and it was very difficult for them to get it off the ground, because my podcasting community stayed with me through all of that. Then it really just took my business to a whole nother phase that now, in hindsight, I felt like I should have done that earlier. I should have done that before the podcast, but I didn't, for all the reasons we know why we don't do things that we should business-wise. For me, having that audience that shows up every week and listens to your show and is banded together in a community, it meant everything when things went south. That, to me, showed me the beautiful power of community and podcasting. I thought it was really cool.
That is a great story, and we will talk about that deeper when you come on TWIP and I do my interview with you. When I talk about, when I do talks about marketing, I have conversations with younger, and it's not an age thing, younger as in experience in photography, but these younger photographers, they get in and they're like, oh yeah, I'm not starting a website. I do all my stuff on Instagram. Here's my IG. I don't, all that, right? If you need to call me, here's my Google Voice number, right? So, which is, and you know where I'm going with this,
I
right? So
do, I do.
it's the, I used to call it digital sharecropping, right?
Yes, it
You're
is.
farming on somebody else's land. If they decide they don't want you there anymore, or they put some unreasonable demands on you in order, for you to be considered to stay there, you got no say in it. So you got to build your own thing, whether it's, and these aren't ors, your podcast, your email list, right? Your conduit, maybe even a membership community, all that stuff. Your conduit that's a direct line from you to your subscribers without a Mark Zuckerberg kind of traffic cop deciding who gets to hear what you had to say and all that. I see the slide I had that I made for this. I had Earth as planet you. That's all your stuff. And on planet Earth, on the surface, is your email, is your podcast, is your self-hosted website, like WordPress or whatever, or Squarespace, whatever, but a site that you own and you're paying money for, right? That's the key. That's the
That's
key. It's
right.
not free. You're paying good money to have this stuff, and now it's your asset. So there, that's on the surface of the planet, but the moons around that planet, or the rings, or however you want to manifest it, or satellites, are Facebook and whatever other social networks. And some are closer to the planet than others. Like I would argue, depending on what you're doing, YouTube might be really close to the planet and big because, but it's still not on the planet. It could fly out of orbit at any time and be gone. Your planet has to be sustainable by what's on the surface, not by what's in orbit. Because Facebook, like we said, could go away. Any of these things could go away. Look at the people that built million-dollar businesses on TikTok and were probably, you know, living in therapy when all that stuff, probably still, because it's still uncertain what's going to happen with
TikTok.
It's still
uncertain. Right? I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with all that. It's not sold yet.
No.
So.
No, it can't be your only pony.
Anything can happen. So this leads me, this leads me to our final point for both of us. And I think this is a good time, and I know you'll totally be into it. This is a good time for us to thank our listeners. Because without them, honest to God, you know, neither of us would be having this conversation right now, you know.
100%. 100%. Yeah. And the listeners, you know, it sounds like a radio station, right? Yes,
right?
Where you're just broadcasting out to these faceless masses that happen to have an antenna up that's getting what you had to say while they're washing dishes and they don't really care, right? That's what I feel like an audience is. I feel like we have like a community.
Yes.
It's more of, because we can, like, they can reach us. They can ask us questions. We can pose surveys. There's a dialogue going on there that that radio stations that broadcast to an audience don't have, right? Yes. That's one to many. We are a community of people that just happen to like some of the same stuff. So that's a difference.
It is.
Yeah, it's fun.
And that's a really good point. And so those of you out there in our communities, our respective communities and our communities that overlap, right? We have, you know, because when I go to workshops, people talk about TWIP and all that kind of stuff. So I think I can speak for both of us on this one thing. Thank you, everyone, because, you know, you don't get the 1,000 podcasts and you don't get to, you know, have Smug Mug interested in you if there isn't a community there to make it happen. So right on, right?
That's right. That's truer words were never spoken.
Hey, Frederick, I can't believe it's been this long since we talked, but I'm so glad we did. You were back there when I was just a guy working for O'Reilly.
Yeah, you're just a little kid back then.
I wasn't even that tall.
I was like, come here, little kid. Let me tell you how to do this.
All right, man. All right. I'll be talking to you sooner than this last gap, okay?
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah, you'll be on TWIP. I'll send you a note. You know how we do it.
I do. I appreciate all three of these guys making time to talk about this craft that we love so much. Podcasting, of course, is something that all of us share together. You and me and Frederick and Randall and Aaron. And it's something that I think really keeps us connected, because photography can be a lone wolf activity. Easily, it can become that. And I think having this community allows us to be both a lone wolf and a happy pack animal. And I'm really thankful to have both aspects. Okay, I have a few items to talk about in the camera industry news. I'm going to start out with powerful noise reduction. What's new in Topaz Photo AI version 4? And this is on f-stoppers, and I have a link to it in the show notes. When dealing with high ISO and fast action photography, noise and image sharpness are constant challenges. Choosing the right tools can mean the difference between usable shots and missed opportunities, especially when your lighting conditions aren't ideal. Coming to you from Matt Kluskowski, this practical video covers the newest updates to Topaz Photo AI and its enhanced features for noise reduction and sharpening. Kluskowski points out that Adobe's built-in sharpening tools have typically fallen short, prompting photographers to look elsewhere for superior results. Topaz Photo AI has addressed some critical performance issues, notably improving processing speeds by roughly a third compared to the previous version. This upgrade particularly benefits tasks that previously took minutes, like the Super Focus feature, now available without its beta label and much faster. Kluskowski demonstrates how Super Focus can salvage otherwise unusable images when the subject is slightly out of focus or blurred due to motion, though he advises moderation due to its intensity. There's a little bit more here. There's actually a lot more in the article, but I'm going to read you one more paragraph and then we'll chat about this for a second. Kozowski emphasizes that while Adobe's noise reduction is adequate for many purposes, Topaz consistently refines its algorithms, providing photographers with continually improving results. He also notes the importance of workflow integration, mentioning both standalone and plug-in options for Topaz Photo AI, enhancing its convenience within your existing Adobe suite. One practical tip is to process raw files directly in Topaz, which typically yields superior outcomes compared to using JPEGs or pre-processed files. The video briefly touches on cloud processing options, suggesting that heavier tasks might benefit from faster cloud rendering, albeit at additional costs. Those of you who are not familiar with Matt Kozowski, you're in for a treat if you watch this video on F-Stoppers. He's been with Adobe, he's been with On1, he's a terrific trainer. He explains things very well. He's very grounded and common sense in his approach, just terrific. If you're a Topaz fan, then you probably will want to watch this and see what's new in Topaz Photo AI 4. It looks terrific and it does look improved. Well, speaking of processing raw files and such, we have another story for you on Photo Focus. First look at DxO Pure Raw 5. Is it worth it? Once again, we have a video associated with this story, and the video is quite good. However, I'm going to read you a little bit of text so you can get a feel for this and if it's something you might be interested in. In this video, I dive into DxO Pure Raw 5 for the first time to see how it handles noise reduction and detail recovery on both sample and personal raw images, aimed at photographers who want cleaner, sharper results straight from the camera without heavy manual editing. This walkthrough explores the Deep Prime and Deep Prime XD2 features, GPU performance considerations, and how Pure Raw fits into a post-processing workflow with tools like Photoshop. If you're curious about improving your high ISO shots or just want to simplify your editing process while maintaining image quality, this hands-on look at DxO Pure Raw 5 could be the confidence boost and tech insight you need. All right, and this is by Julie Powell, and this is on Photo Focus. So these are competitors. And over the years, I've used both Pure Raw and Topaz, and they're both quite good. I think the thing that I will mention about each of them is that people tend to like the look of one of these over the other. And I'm not saying that what DxO does with Pure Raw is better or worse than what Topaz does with Photo AI, but they do it a little bit differently. And then each of them are add-ons to your workflow. So in my opinion, it has to be worth it for both the expense and the extra time, you know, adding another stop, so to speak, on your photo workflow journey for these results. However, if you are trying to solve a problem with high ISO images, both of these can do a very good job. It's worth trying the trials of each of them. But I would even start before that by watching both of these videos and see which interface sings to you more, which approach makes more sense to you. Like I said, it's very much like choosing among camera brands of Canon, Nikon, OM System, Fujifilm. They all take very good pictures, but their approach to doing that differs a bit. And that's what we see with these two very good tools, but also tools that take time and cost money. And finally, I have a note from The Verge. Nikon's cameras are about to get more expensive in the US because of tariffs. Let me read you what they have to say. After months of remaining quiet about how President Donald Trump's tariffs on Chinese-made goods may affect its business, Nikon has announced a necessary price adjustment for its products that will come into effect for the U.S. starting on June 23, 2025. The company hasn't shared any specifics on which of its imaging products will see a price increase or how much the increases may end up being, but it could mean this is the time to grab hardware like the recent Z5 II if you've been eyeing it. So this is from Nikon. At Nikon, we remain committed to providing the highest quality imaging products and value to our customers, Nikon said in a statement posted Friday. Due to the recent tariffs, a necessary price adjustment for products will take effect on June 23, 2025. We will be carefully monitoring any tariff developments and may adjust pricing as necessary to reflect the evolving market conditions. We wish to thank our customers for their understanding and know that we are taking every possible step to minimize the impact on our community. So that is from Nikon. I think it's easy to say, especially for us, right, for this audience, if you've been eyeing something from Nikon, go get it now. I'm not going to say that, though. I'm not saying not to do that. But I think that this has been an interesting roller coaster ride up until this point, and I don't think the roller coaster has stopped yet. And I think there'll be opportunities in the future to score the equipment that you want at reasonable prices. There may be some temporary fluctuations. Some of these fluctuations may stick around. We don't know. But I wouldn't go into the mentality that I have to go get everything that I think I'm going to want in the next year or two right now, before June 23rd, if I'm a Nikon shooter. There will continue to be deals, there will continue to be adjustments, and we're just going to have to take this week by week. We'll be keeping an eye on it. Bryce, take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. I want to thank our Inner Circle Bold members and our Inner Circle members for supporting this community and this podcast. As Frederick and I were talking about earlier, this is the engine that powers the bus. It really is. Our Inner Circle members, they are the engine and the gas, both, or in my case, the electrons. At any rate, you get what I'm saying here. I am so thankful for all of our Inner Circle members, and I appreciate them, and I'm looking forward to spending quality time with them. First, starting out this week, we launch our Creative Camera Techniques online workshop, which is just chock full of Inner Circle members because, of course, they get discounts to all the online workshops. And then, about a month later, we are going to do the Photos for macOS Masterclass. And that one is totally full of Inner Circle members because it was a perk for those who signed up for Inner Circle Bold when that offer was running. So we're going to be spending lots of time together. I'm looking so forward to it. A big thanks to all of our Inner Circle members. If you want to learn more, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. And finally, I want to give a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. And I want to touch base again about this idea I've discussed a couple times recently, but I've been putting it to use on some of my projects, which is the value of making a print to help you better understand a photo. Now, the reason why I bring it up again is because I've been practicing some of my tutorials for this upcoming Creative Camera Techniques workshop. And it's been one thing to look at some of these techniques that I've done on screen, but then they've taken on a life of their own when I make a print and I go, that's even cooler than I thought it was. And making prints involving some of these creative techniques, just, I don't know, it feels like artwork. That is the simplest way I can say it. They just feel like artwork when I hold them in my hands and I hand them to other people. So this is one of the values of printing for me, and it's top of mind for me because I'm using it so much right now. You don't have to do giant prints and everything. You can learn a lot about your photos by just printing out on 8.5 by 11 paper, taking a look at it, let it just hang out for a bit and get to know it. You'll see things over time that you might not ever see on your iPhone screen or even your lovely 27-inch LCD. Okay. This is all thanks to Red River Paper. They provide everything that we need for this process, from tutorials to all the different sizes and all the different surfaces. They're a huge supporter of the digital story, and I am a huge supporter of Red River Paper. A big thanks to them for supporting this show. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the conversations. I'll be back with more good stuff next week. There are some announcements coming down the pike. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.